Thank you.
Oh, what an uplifting song. I love that. Can you just picture yourself sitting on top of the world? And whew. Don't want to hit the microphone. Bad things happen when you touch that. Or so I've been told. Okay. How many of you are familiar with the movie That Was Then, This Is Now? Anyone? It's an 80s drama that is basically about leaving things behind, or sometimes not. And it's basically about two old friends fighting over a girl. I know, sounds like a science fiction plot, doesn't it? Well, it was the title that impressed me, because I was contemplating, how do we prevent our past from ruining our future? How many of you have had your lives basically turn out the way you wanted them to, or thought they would, since you envisioned them back as perhaps a teen? You don't have to raise your hands for this one, but just think about it. I wanted to live in a round house with purple shag carpet and be a princess. Kind of gave up on the first one, but I'm still working on the princess gig. Hopefully, you've managed to enjoy your life overall up until this point. Well, if not, it's not too late to alter the course. That's the good news. In a talk I gave a while back, I mentioned how research shows that 98% of the thoughts that we think today are basically recycled thoughts from yesterday. And 80% of those thoughts are often negative. It has to do with this primitive part of our brain that's always looking out for danger in order to keep us safe. So that's where the negativity factor can kick in. Maybe I should have renamed this talk, That Was Then, and This Is Still Then, unless you want to change your thinking. Once we realize that we're not being chased by some angry saber-toothed tiger, maybe we don't need to lug our past around like a ball and chain, especially if those negative memories no longer serve us. What might we be getting out of doing this? Is there stuff from our past that we find juicy and intriguing when we talk about it? Perhaps we even like some of the reactions we get when we share it. When I work with kids, especially middle school age, they love to tell the broken bone stories, and the trips to the ER, and the fights they've been in, and they seem to get more and more animated with each sharing. Well, I've known some adults, including myself, who've also done this. We kind of like the excitement of it all. If you could create a movie on your life up to this point, would it be a drama, a comedy, a horror, or maybe a musical, or maybe a combination thereof? Do you have country western songs playing in the background throughout your movie involving big trucks, broken hearts, and maybe a dead dog or two? What beliefs are playing out as the main scenes of your life in your movie? Is your lead character a victim, a hero, or maybe just more of an observer wanting to step back and not get too involved in this whole thing called life? Byron Katie. She's a wonderful teacher and author of self-inquiry. And she said once, quote, "We only do three things in life. We sit, we stand, we lie horizontal. The rest is just story." End of quote. Think about that for a moment. What story or script are you currently writing about your life? What beliefs have you based your story on that might have began way back in your past from a general statement that you randomly heard some adult say? To demonstrate this point a little bit, I have something I've labeled the yarn of beliefs. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to just kind of toss it out to you guys, and I want you to just shout out when you get it some negative belief that you heard perhaps growing up. And hang on, like I'm going to hang on to the end here. Just hang on to that little tip, and then you're going to toss it to somebody else. We're just going to do this 3 or 4 times, but I just want to show you something here. So one belief that I heard while growing up was that don't trust strangers. Okay? So I'm going to give it to James there.
Only the good die young.
Oh, okay. Hang on to your part of the string, and then toss it to somebody else. Anybody else can shout out some? Oh! It bounced right off Sharon. She did not want to accept that. Okay, can you just shout out? Yeah. So just shout out some belief that you might have heard, Susan. It doesn't have to be one of yours. It just could be somebody, what somebody said. We can help you with it, too.
You can't brush your hair outside.
You can't brush your hair outside. Ooh, sounds serious. Okay, hang on to your tip and toss it to somebody else. It's okay. Go ahead.
I'm not smart.
Oh, okay. Hang on to your tip. Wow, way over to the other side. What's another belief, Ken?
I can't do it.
I can't do it.
There's not enough.
Ah.
You thought
life is really hard. You thought you were safe sitting in the back. Okay, hold on to it for a second. I think we've had enough negativity, right? So, hang on to the string. I haven't forgotten that you're all tied up. Don't worry here. Byron Katie also said, a thought is harmless unless we believe it. So we are vibrational, energetic beings. And basically that just means that we vibrate similarly according to the thoughts and beliefs we have. Those of you holding the string or are close enough to feel it, just reach out and touch it if you can. Now feel the vibration, because we are truly these vibrational beings. Pull on it a little if you have. And we translate vibration through our thoughts, our senses, our touch, our smell, our taste, our thermostats, our radio waves, our words and emotions. Now, one way to stop this naughty knot from tying everyone up is to begin to question our beliefs. And I'm going to do that questioning process. Scissors are going to help. So one way, Byron Katie says, because she is the queen of questioning in my mind, is to use this method that she has, asking 4 questions. And the first one, is it true? Do I really need to not trust strangers? Well, I can pretty much say, no, that's not true. And then I go to the second question. Can I absolutely know that it's true? And once again, I say, no, I've had many strangers in my life. I wouldn't be married today if I didn't trust a stranger. So that frees another one up. We can go on around to how do I react when I believe that thought? I can't trust strangers. Well, I become fearful. I shut down. I close my way. So questioning it, freed up again. Now, who would I be without that thought of perhaps I can't trust strangers? You can let it go now. Is freed up to trust, to be open, to involve more people into my world. Now, if you could pull that back with you for a moment. And who has a cat? There you go, a gift for your kitty cat. Now, what I'd like I'll get the rest of it, but if you, oh, okay, thank you. We could do this with positive as well, affirmations. I don't want to tie you guys up again, it'll take way too much time, but just shout out a few thoughts that you also heard growing up. Positive beliefs. Anyone? Yes. You are loved. I like that. James?
You like that? Go out and find out how they did it.
Oh, nice. I like that. Ah, okay. So we've got, now what I'd like to do is I've asked Crystal Trimble to come up and help me with this next part, because it's easy to kind of think about, oh, how do I question thoughts? But we are actually going to read a little segment from Byron Katie just to show you how this might work. So this is not about Crystal. These are not her issues. I'm going to make that clear.
That's why I didn't memorize this.
Yeah. She wrote me last night and said, do I have to memorize all this? I'm going to share the other part I wrote. Okay. So I will play the role of Byron Katie, and she will play the role of somebody who's coming to talk to her. So you could see how this questioning process might work for you. Go ahead.
Other people are cute and generous or funny and brave and strong. I'm not. I'm unlovable, and that makes me desperately unhappy.
Sweetheart, do you want to know the truth?
Yes.
You're unlovable? Is that true?
It's what I think. No one ever really loved me, not even my mother. She never hugged me or when I was little, and she always was shouting at me and rushing out the door to get to her job.
Your mother was always rushing out the door to get to her job, and that means she doesn't love you? Is that true?
She may have been too tired to hug us and talk to us much. I can see that. She did have to support me and my brother all on her own.
Wasn't that love?
Could be.
I am unlovable. Can you absolutely know that that's true?
No, I can't know that, but I still feel it.
Of course you feel it. Because you believe that thought. That's why we're questioning the thought. Pain seems to be a great motivator at the beginning. Later on, you may find that you don't need it. How do you react when you believe that thought that you don't even know is true?
Heavy. I lose all spontaneity. I'm lonely, and I long for what I can't have. Nothing else seems to matter, so I don't do much except stay home and try to escape from the thought by watching television and eating when I'm not even hungry.
Who would you be without the thought, I'm unlovable?
Oh, I'd be very much lighter. I could see myself walking down the street, just liking the fall leaves and the sunlight. I could feel much closer to the people I know, and I'd be interested in them instead of in why they don't love me. I might take a vacation by myself and enjoy it, or maybe even ask someone to come. That could be fun, too.
Turn it around.
People are unlovable. Yes, when I believe that I'm unlovable, I'm so full of sadness and resentments I can't love anyone else.
Can you find another turnaround?
I'm lovable?
Can you see how that is more honest?
It's hard to see. I really want to, but it's hard.
Find three genuine ways that you are lovable.
That's really hard. Okay, here's one. I have a nice smile.
Good. That's a very good find.
I've been a good sister. I've always been there for my brother.
That's two. Can you find one more?
Nothing else comes to me.
Find one thing that you did today that you find lovable.
Well, I fed the squirrels.
Yes, that was kind of you. That's three. The fact is that you are lovable, whether you like it or not. There's nothing you can do about it. Thank you, Crystal. Okay. Oh, that's an example, and this is her book, I Need Your Love, Is That True? And I invite you just to explore this a little bit more so you can get a sense of how it could work in your life. Okay, this begins to free up some of that trauma drama that we often play in the movies in our minds. And so it's just another tool. There are many tools out there. You ultimately have to do what works for you. NPR was pointing out studies recently that was dealing with the human memory. And it said that many times we would remember things that didn't actually occur through the power of suggestion. So people would fill in the missing pieces for us until we kind of began to believe it was real. Like your brother might have said something, and you're like, well, maybe I was there. And then I've done that too, where I found out my brother was totally wrong, you know, when I checked with parents. Studies have also shown that eyewitness accounts aren't always accurate. Our brain doesn't know the difference between what is perceived and what is actually occurring. Therefore, it might be a good idea to begin to question some of those beliefs or thoughts that were formed way back when. When I was about 5, growing up here in Chico on Hemlock Street, I had an experience one night that helped form some beliefs that stayed with me way too long. I was home alone with, as I said, I was 5, so my sister was probably 6, and my brother was 7, and then the other one was 9. Pretty young kids. And I guess we were rather bored, and Mom and Dad were not home. Well, they decided it would be a good idea for us, my brothers, that is, including moi, the little innocent one, to go out and sweep the sidewalks that surrounded the block. Mind you, it was after dark, and why they needed to be swept at night is beyond me. Well, we all got brooms, and we made up our official cleaning uniforms, which basically consisted of big old gunny sack bags. And we cut a hole out for the head, 2 holes for the arms. I'm pretty sure my feet cleared the bottom of the bag, but I'm not 100% on that. We then proceeded to go around the block, sweeping as we went and humming. Well, we were swishing away in front of this one neighbor's house when all of a sudden she came out and turned on the porch light and sternly yelled, "Who's out there and what are you doing?" Well, my brothers and sister decided to quickly scurry and hide in the bushes. Terrified and not being fully prepped on what to do about this, I just stood there in shock, draped in my giant gunny sack bag, broom in hand, kind of looking like an abandoned orphan from the Dust Bowl. I sheepishly called out, "It's me, ma'am, and I'm sweeping the sidewalks." Well, I wasn't sure where my siblings were, and I kind of felt like a lamb thrown to the wolves at this point. I then apologetically stood there, not knowing what to do next. She didn't sound the least bit grateful for all the hard work I had been doing. Instead, she told me that I needed to go home and stop doing this. I then said, "Okay," and I waited, still in fear and frozen in guilt over something that I didn't even know was wrong. Apparently, she no longer felt threatened by the little gunny sack girl, so she went back inside. And then I was eventually retrieved by my accomplices in this sweeping crime. And while I don't remember if we went right home or kept on sweeping around the block, I do remember this. I should feel guilty about things without even knowing why. I let the feelings of guilt take up way too much residence in my life. Ridiculous beliefs that, if questioned, could be released, yet instead, they were allowed to draw similar vibrational thoughts of unworthiness over the years. And after time, they attracted more vibrational matches, which led to some self-defeating negative experiences. We are not meant to live in apology, guilt, and fear. But that was then. So onward and upward to the most creative part of our movies. This is now. Now is the point of power that we all have access to. Now is the only part that we can truly control with our reactions or our responses. If we truly believe this teaching, we have all that we need in this moment of now. In this tactile-based, touch-it, taste-it, smell-it, see-it universe, we often seek to manage things. In our physical bodies, we try and control life through basic physical laws that we think we can manipulate. In classic physics, scientists begin to question simple, basic premises when things don't always make sense. They were confused about the way the predictable mechanical world wasn't always that predictable. They found the universe to be much more mysterious than they thought possible. I know it very much baffled Einstein for for a number of years. Things weren't turning out the way his mathematical writing suggested. So they began to question ideas about how things work. In quantum physics, they talk about collapsing the wave. Now, it's on a subatomic level, and it's with our focus and observation of it. Now, this is not rocket science. This is religious science. So let's explore this concept a little bit further. In Science of Mind teachings, we know that what we focus on and give our attention to, we get more of. Ernest Holmes wrote in the book, This Thing Called You, quote, physical facts, forms, and conditions are no obstruction to this principle. It flows through them and takes new form in them. It remolds them. That which can remake, that which molds, can remold. That which creates can recreate. Remember, what you see and what you do not see come from the visible in the invisible made manifest. End of quote. A simple way of combining this notion of quantum physics with science of mind is to do another little activity. Anyone see the movie What the Bleep Do We Know? Great. That'll make this next thing a little bit clearer, I hope. They talk about quantum superposition in the scene where they have a basketball court. Anybody remember that one? And basically, it deals with all these possibilities at one time. So what I'd like you to do now is I want everyone, if you can, to raise your arms and just wave them around in either the same form, random forms, just forward or back. Just don't hit your neighbor. They're your arms, so you figure out what you want to do with them. It's a Sunday morning aerobics. And what I'm going to do, keep on waving if you can. I'm going to turn around where I'm no longer observing you. And what you're going to do, once I turn back around, is you're going to freeze in whatever position you're in, okay? So I'm going to go ahead, no making faces or anything. Okay, one, two, three, freeze. Okay, Al, wow. I'm going to now take on Al's position, superposition, and I want all the other arm possibilities to just collapse. Just your arms, not your bodies. Okay, so hold on a second. So because I'm observing Al, that's what I free. Oh, April's in that too. Okay, now go ahead and put your arms down. Thank you. But basically, that's the new position that I focus on. So quantum physics shows how positions or particles go from being random, bouncing around in a chaotic way, to fixed once they are observed by the experimenter. Maybe that's what happened to me on the sidewalk that day. I froze. The consciousness of the observer is what makes the difference here. In fact, they've done studies where they had like robots with eyes hooked up to observe, and it doesn't work that way. It's the consciousness, the living human being that is giving their attention to something. Now, if you're not confused about this, then something is wrong. This is a very baffling concept that scientists are still trying to figure out. They don't understand why particles and waves at the tiniest level behave the way they do, but they do. Overall, scientists are just beginning to draw connections between what we think about, we can bring about. So how do you want to create your life from here on forward? Find little things to begin feeling better about. And focus your energy on those things or experiences. Give your attention to what you want. I didn't need to stand up here and condemn all the other arm possibilities, saying, oh, I don't like that one or that one or that one. I just needed to focus on what I wanted. It's not the big things. It's the little stuff that can begin to shift the energy flow. Life is strung together by series of moments. Do you start your beliefs early in the day and consciously build on it with something that you like? Perhaps you meditate before you get up. Maybe you turn on the news first thing and then start believing those set of facts or truths or notions from that. That negative belief yarn starts bouncing around, drawing more and more beliefs like it. Do you really need that pill the commercial is trying to push on you? Are you being a guardian of your consciousness to make sure that that you are giving more energy to things you want and not the negative ones? I was listening to the radio while on a road trip recently, and I've been driving for quite a few hours, so I was kind of on autopilot, and all of a sudden, you know, with the radio on, I started to feel more and more irritable and more grumpy, and pretty soon I just felt like ramming the other cars around me. Not a good thing to do. And I kind of woke up and I realized that I was listening to this very hateful talk show host that had I thought about it, I would have never turned him on. So I had to consciously change that channel, tune into something positive that I wanted. Yet so often, we go about on autopilot, not being aware of what we're absorbing into our consciousness. We have to create the mold or path for experiences that we want. It could be noticing the fact that you're still alive and what a warm bed that you have to wake up in. Maybe it's looking outside and appreciating the beautiful rain or the sun. Be deliberate in your thinking. We live in an incredibly beautiful place here in Northern California. In fact, this month's theme is inspiration through nature. And so, if you need to find something beautiful to get you inspired, go out into Bidwell Park and look at the way the autumn leaves are all changing right now. It's like a mosaic of color. You can rewrite your script by focusing on positive things as well as things that give you joy and emphasizing that. Maybe you did have some traumatic childhood experiences, but reframe it so that you are the hero for having made it through. You can have a Phoenix Rising theme in that you overcame many challenging obstacles. You've gotten what you need from the horror movies of life. Now perhaps you can move through the drama and maybe even start creating more of a comedy and take yourself a little bit more lightly. Voltaire once said, "God is a comedian playing to an audience too afraid to laugh." End quote. I would have dissolved by now if I couldn't laugh or chuckle at some of my embarrassing moments, because they keep on happening. In fact, on Halloween, I dressed up in what I thought was a really great costume, and I had a big giant wig and tattoos all over my body, and I showed up at a school where nobody was dressed up. Cast yourself as the next Lucille Ball or Jim Carrey of your movie. I've played Dumb and Dumber in both roles in my movie of life. So for this moment forward, give yourself permission to live in the now and be focused on the little silly things. There's a great lady in the audience right now who's inspired me to do that, Renee. Focus on those things that bring you joy and make you come alive. The parts that you can laugh about, laugh. The parts that are difficult, begin to question your beliefs about them. If you can, bless them as they help transform you into the strong Wonder Woman or Superman of a movie that is still being directed by you. I want you, if you can, to think of a new title for your life's movie. Something that doesn't repeat that same old theme, for that was then. Have it embrace and celebrate what is now. Let it be an affirmation to move you in a new positive direction in your life. So, to summarize all this up in kind of movie speak, there once was a beautiful mind. It went back to the future, but only discovered that it was gone with the wind. So it stopped telling the never-ending story and began to question many of its beliefs and fears, like, who is afraid of Virginia Woolf? I've always wondered that. It went through and was transformed by the butterfly effect. And now it dwells in the eternal sunshine of the spotless mind. Thank you for listening, and namaste.